This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
We start the show talking football. Yeah, I know we had a couple big ACC basketball games last night. Home teams hold serve. We'll talk about the Hokies and the Tigers with their big wins. But we're going to start with football because the ACC bowl season got underway yesterday in the Cheez-It Bowl. And the Miami Hurricanes, and we talked about this yesterday a bunch, with an opportunity to kind of put some momentum heading into 21. And one of the things that Manny Diaz talked about from the get-go, we need to bring energy, right? We're going to need to get the excitement right out of the get-go, especially coming off that debacle, which was the North Carolina game. And lo and behold, it's 21-0 first quarter. And the Canes put up a valiant effort to get back into the football game, but right out of the gate, bam, bam, bam. You're down three touchdowns, and quite frankly, it was an uphill climb all night long for the Miami Hurricanes. So you're down 21-0. All of a sudden, you got De'Ara King making a run there in the second quarter, and the worst thing that could possibly happen is your star quarterback, who's already said, I'm coming back next year, which is great news for the Canes, goes down with a knee injury. Now, I will tell you, as of this morning, it's 7:01 a.m., we still don't know the severity of the injury. If you watched the game yesterday, you saw De'Ara walking around on crutches in the second half. To me, that was at least encouraging. But the injury is just one of those you go, yikes. And for all the conversations we had in terms of players opting out, not wanting to play in a quote-unquote meaningless bowl game, you get a situation like this. And there's the injury to De'Ara King. And again, our thoughts and prayers go out to him. Terrific young man. And we hope that there is good news later today from the medical standpoint regarding that knee. But De'Ara King goes out with the injury. Canes, of course, down 21-0 in the first quarter. And then did a really remarkable job. And Cozy Perry comes in, plays well. But De'Ara King out of that lineup, not to mention the opts out on the defensive side with Phillips and Roche. Not quite the same Miami team that we watched all season long. So if you're a Miami Hurricane fan today, yeah, bummed out that the North Carolina game still sticks in your craw because you win that game. It's a home game in the Orange Bowl, but that's long. And listen, that's rearview mirror. You lose another bowl game. That's now 10 of the last 11 games in bowls Miami has lost. If you get out of bed today as a Miami Hurricane fan, you look back at 2020, remarkable that you played as many games as you did. 8-3, the final record. When the AP final poll comes out, you're probably going to be a fringe top 25 team, right? You went into it ranked. You may leave unranked. We'll see how that plays out. What is the assessment of Miami football in 2020? If you're a Hurricanes fan, because sitting on this desk, this chair, I think Miami is much better off right now than they were a year ago. However, it seems like Miami had some missed opportunities, right? You go through the season, you're at 8-1 at one point in time. The only blemish was a road trip to Death Valley. No shame in losing to Clemson. But you had opportunities down the stretch. The North Carolina game at home, I keep emphasizing, was a big game. And then a chance for redemption in the bowl. Oklahoma State's a nice team. No knock on Mike Gundy's guys. But right out of the gate, you're down 21-0. And given the way you lost the North Carolina game and your first performance, your first 15 minutes was a complete no-show. Because that game, listen, I was doing the radio show yesterday afternoon on 84, and I checked the scores going up 7-0. Oop, it's 14-0. Oop, it's 21-0. And you're thinking, yikes, what in the world are we doing here? So for Miami, hey, the good news is the team showed some fight. They didn't quit after getting punched in the face. But again, I think you take inventory of this team and you go, man, what coulda, woulda, shoulda, right? So you're from Miami at 8-3. Like I said, I think you're better off this year than you were this time a year ago. But where is Miami as we head into 21? I throw that question out there to Miami fans this morning if you want to jump on board and talk about it. And I know it's, listen, you come off a loss, you really don't want to talk. I get it. But we're looking big picture here, not necessarily last night. 8-3. I thought Manny Diaz, again, staff changes, great job in the transfer portal. impact players across the board. You got positive news of De'Eriq King coming back next year. Now the question is, what's his health and his status going to be? We'll find out more later today. So Miami once again will be an interesting team as we feature them in 21 ACC football. But I think when you look back, man, Miami's going to go back and say, man, woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? The Clemson game got away from us. North Carolina, we weren't ready to play. And last night, down 21-0 out of the gate. I just expected more of a punch from Miami from the get-go. But if you start looking at the numbers for the game last night, 512 total yards. Now, that's, again, without De'Eriq King for the last 2.5 quarters. Thought Perry came in, did some good things. Again, you got some young weapons, which you really, really like. So 512 total yards. You lose the game. You lost the turnover battle. -2 in that department. It's something normally the Canes thrive on. 4-on-14 for third downs. That's not going to be good enough. Moving the chains. It seemed like Miami got some momentum early in the second half. Had a chance to get back in the game. The two-point conversion, which got overturned, which I disagreed with. Could have tied the thing up. But it just seemed like Miami was always a step behind trying to take over that game last night. So, certainly a tough situation. After the game, De'Eriq King went to social media and put a tweet up, which I think we should put up there because the guy's a great young player. And again, we wish him a very speedy recovery. Who knows how severe the injury is. But De'Eriq King said afterwards, sometimes I don't know why, but I won't question him. And again, his faith certainly comes through on that standpoint. And we wish him the best because De'Eriq King coming back from Miami kind of sets the table. But I will point out again, Miami will open up the 21 campaign against Alabama. And much like a year ago when he went Duke, FIU, and laid an egg in the bowl game with La Tech, and there was all kinds of heat on Manny. Even after the first year, he had to make some changes. He did. I thought the Canes did a lot of good things in 2020, but this season kind of ends with a thump too. North Carolina and now the bowl game last night. And losing 10 of 11 in bowls, I know a lot of folks will make no big deal, you know, because everything kind of gets lumped into the college football playoffs now and everything else does have a trickle-down effect. But you want to win those games, right? I mean, I think anytime you strap it on to go play, you want to win a game. And when you have a heritage and a tradition like Miami football that talks about past national championships and glory and all that great stuff, hey, I don't care if it's a Cheez-It Bowl. You want to win a game. So end of the day, 8-3 for the Canes. Better than a year ago. But again, like I said, I thought there were some lost opportunities for the Canes on that standpoint. And defensively, now, listen, you lose Phillips, you lose Roche. The defense really got pushed around the last two ball games of the season when you're playing two good clubs. That's something as a concern, I think, as far as 21 goes. You're going to have to improve on that side of the football if you want to get to a quote-unquote championship level. But, again, the numbers don't lie. Look at this. The last two games, nearly 1,200 yards of total offense, 99 points. And right from the get-go, first quarter points, bam, bam, 42, right? 21 apiece. You know, you got to be ready to play coming out of the gates. So that is a problem. So, again, I'll throw that one out there today before we get Wes back on here. For any Miami fans that want to chime in and just kind of do inventory on what the 2020 campaign is. 8-3. Again, remarkable you play 11 games. That's the first thing. You congratulate everybody on that standpoint. There were some highlights. I thought the team, again, played more consistent at some point in time than we saw last year. But the way that thing ended, you look back and say, man, we had a chance. Beat North Carolina. You're in the Orange Bowl. New Year's Day, 6-game. Potential chance to win 10 games in the regular season. It's only happened one time since Miami has joined the ACC. That's right. Only one time have the Canes had a double-digit winning season. That was a couple years ago with Mark Richt and the guys when he went 10-3. So at the end of the day, the Canes go 8-3. ACC back in action today, right here in our backyard of Charlotte. Duke's Mayo Bowl. We got to Wake Forest, Wisconsin. We'll talk about that game later on as well. We had a chance to hear from Manny Diaz as well after the ball game last night. And he basically said he never lost faith in his team.
At no point did I think that we would lose that game. And I don't think our team did either until it hit triple zeros.
Okay, Coach. Got it. But though, I'll go back, though, to one of the things that we heard from Manny early in the week was we've got to come out and be excited. We've got to be the most excited team on the field. And you know what? when you're down 21-0, you got to be ready to go. The time I saw Miami excited was literally coming out of the second half, where it was like, hey, let's go attack and go get these guys. And you got a sense, I thought, at least early in the third quarter, that Miami had the momentum, had a chance to tie the game up. I thought they had on the two-point conversion. But once they kind of got even, if you will, they just were never able to get over the hump. And I think, again, it goes back to defense. You got to be able to stop people at some point in time. There's Harris going for a great run. He had a great catch later on, too, which could be a wide receiver U deal. But the Canes, again, offensively, 512 total yards. Got no issue with that, but it was just the defensive side. 37 in this game, not good enough. And again, I go back to that first quarter. You put yourself in a hole. You just were never able to dig out of it. 21-0 down, game, set, match. Catch you later.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Good morning, Wes.
What's up, Pack? How you doing?
I'm fine. Hope you are. Sounds like you've had quite a morning down there in Cartersville.
Oh, it's been a peach. It's been a peach, as they say. You know, we're there. We're here, though, one way or another. We continue to persevere, do we not?
Bumpy trail, my man. Nothing's easy in live television. all right, before we move forward with hoops, I will ask you for your opinion on last night's Miami Hurricane Cheez-It Bowl. Mm.
The most surprising piece to me was, based on everything Manny Diaz had said going in the game, that Oklahoma State threw the first three punches before Miami reacted. I feel awful for Derek King. I do. I feel I hope it's not as bad as it looked, but it looked bad last night. But they showed me they could come back, but I was stunned that it was 21-0. I really was. I found that one hard to believe. I found the concept here that, you know, a Miami team that had given up 62 to Carolina would be down by three scores in the first, 9 minutes of the ball game, almost 14 minutes of the ball game, I guess, by the end of the first period. They did come back. I saw a lot of things I liked. Nkosi Perry, I think, deserves a lot of credit. He's taken some bullets and some real heat in the last couple of years. But on the whole, I thought, I thought he did some good things for them. Surprised they couldn't get stops. At times, I thought they had real opportunities to get stops. And I'll give you something else too, Pack. I wasn't a big fan last night of the flag and no flag situation in postseason. I thought we had some calls that weren't called. Pass interference, I thought for sure, on Brevin Jordan earlier in the game was not called. And then late, we were getting flags seemingly like every third snap, and I just thought it was too much. And I never got any clarity as to what crew that was and what league they were from, but that was just not a good that took away from the game. Let's put it that way. When the game got close, the flags took away from the game. That's kind of what I'm getting at, I guess.
Well, I thought it was a little sloppy on both sides, but, you know, these are teams that are reaching the finish line, and you're not playing for a national championship, but there is a lot of pride at stake for momentum for 21. And as we discussed yesterday, I thought both teams had something to prove. I think both teams kind of felt like they lost out on something in the regular season. Oklahoma State had control of the Big 12 race, and it got away from them, and they didn't even make it to the title game. So there had to be some unfinished business in terms of, hey, here's the reason we got to go out strong. For Miami, as it's been well documented, the North Carolina game, and I want to keep beating it up, but that was a humongously big lost opportunity, and you stunk it up in the process. So you expected a quick start, and you got just the exact opposite. And I think if you're a Miami fan, that's a problem, right? You're sitting there going, okay, tonight we bounce back, we do our thing, and next thing you know, it's 21 zip before you got to your first handful of Cheez-Its. And again, I thought they battled back, which I thought is a great sign, because they didn't just throw into town and say, man, we're done, we're out of here, catch you later. So you saw some fight in a football team that did not have Roche, did not have Phillips on the defensive side, and you lose your star leader and De'Aaron King. And like we said, thoughts and prayers go out to him and the entire Miami football family, that it's not awful news today. So You know, at the end of the day, like I said, I opened up the phone lines for Miami fans if they want to call in and just kind of give us inventory of what you thought an 8-3 season felt like in 2020. I think they're light years ahead of where they were a year ago.
Absolutely.
But they also have some unfinished business. They really missed some opportunities to kind of get to where they really want to be. And at the end of the day, at 8-3, they're going to probably be a fringe top 25 team. I know that's not what they want to be. Like I said, I think they're better off than they were a year ago. But Miami will be an interesting story as we move into 21. That's for sure, as they open up against Alabama.
Yeah, and they had that chance last night. The door was kind of cracked for them, right, to spend the offseason toward the top 10 in the preseason. King is a Heisman Trophy candidate. Now the uncertainty of King's injury and, you know, whatever extent it is, combined with some of the unknown and the way they finished, is going to kind of be the storyline. And that's the thing that you feel bad for Manny Diaz and that team about, because in all honesty, they had a chance, as we said yesterday, to kind of bang it down a little bit and come into 2021 as a, I don't know if it would be top 10, but it would certainly be top 15, one would think, and play a high-line game like Alabama to open the season.
Yep. I mean, because listen, you go WW to end the year, you're 10-1 and you're a top 10 team. You end up going LL and you're 8-3 in a fringe top 25. That is a big contrast. And there's a big difference between being, hey, we're a top 10 team with a great leader coming back versus being a top, you know, fringe top 25 and still got some pieces we've got to figure out. So again, I think Miami's better off than they were a year ago, but there's still some unfinished business as they move forward. Mm-hmm. And Manny's going to have to address all that, given the opt-outs and hopefully the status of your star quarterback, De'Aaron King, and hopefully he can go in 21. So we'll see what happens on that front. All right. Basketball wise last night, believe it or not, you and I actually got them both right. Doesn't happen very often, but the home teams held serve and I had both TVs going last night watching football and the Clemson Florida State basketball game, and the game in Little John lived up to Billings. Now we knew that would be a good game and that was a back and forth affair. The Noles took it like a comfortable lead early second half, up 7, and then Clemson's defense was out of sight. And these are two teams that play a lot of dudes now. I mean, this is, Leonard's been doing it for a long time and has built a great, great basketball program. And we've talked about Brad Brunell's guys. They've got a lot of guys that can play and can score and contribute, and their defense is out of sight. And, man, the second half, goodness gracious, you know, Dawes was great. And they got great production off the bench. I mean, that's a great win for Clemson. That's now 5 Power 5 wins for the Tigers before we get to 21. And keep an eye on those guys.
Mark, I thought that team played with a lot of poise last night.
Sure did.
That team played, I mean, the John Newman, Amir Sims, Alamir Dawes, Nick Honor, the Fordham transfer. I mean, I was really impressed last night. That's a question last night about, you know, where's this team's ceiling now? Because that's the team that, you know, kind of got the early momentum with Mississippi State and Purdue. The win against Maryland, I think, is one that, and next time we visit with Brad Brownell, we'll ask him about the build off of that. But I thought last night had a lot to do with what they've been through this year as much as what they've been through the last couple of years. And I was extremely impressed with Clemson's effort last night, the way they handled it. And to be honest with you now, I'm kind of optimistic about, you know, thinking highly of them in the preseason. And now I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, I may have gotten that one right, at least for a while. But they played with a ton of poise last night. They really did. And I that was the kind of senior-laden team I thought they were capable of having, and they proved it with the win last night.
Well, Honor and Dawes scored 24 in the second half. 10 different players scored. Mm. And we kind of called them Florida State light when we had Brad on the show a couple weeks ago. And again, we know what a great job Leonard's done in Tallahassee, but Clemson comes at you with waves. But their defense is really good, which is no surprise, because that's what Brad's always kind of put his hat on, that, hey, we're going to go and defend you. That's a good club. You know, they got one loss, and that was a road trip to Virginia Tech, kind of on short notice because he had played Bama, I think, on a Saturday, and then they were on a road trip at Blacksburg on a Tuesday. And, hey, Virginia Tech's 2-0. We'll talk about the Hokies here momentarily. They're on top of the leaderboard as we speak. But I do think, again, you did NC State last week with North Carolina. I think when you start talking about NC State, Virginia Tech, Clemson. I would throw Syracuse in there as well. Those may be four teams that were not getting any kind of love in terms of spotlight while we were talking about Virginia and Duke and North Carolina and Florida State and Louisville. But those other four, Clemson, Virginia Tech, Syracuse, NC State, maybe the four to keep an eye on as we keep asking who is the alpha dog in this league.
Well, that's the part, right? We still don't really have any clarity to that. We have some candidates, but we don't have any clarity. Right. And, you know, some of the folks on social media having fun with us last night, Clemson fans who said, well, you guys picked Florida State, and now, you know, look what we just did and things like that. Well, remember, it may only last 24 to 48 hours depending on the next game. We still got so much uncertainty in the ACC at this juncture that it's going to be interesting to see how the next couple of weeks play out. To that effect, I thought what Virginia Tech did last night showed you a little bit about what Mike Young's built in about a year and change there, because you blew a big lead in the second half and held on to survive Isaiah Wong missing a three in the final seconds, and you knew who to ride, though. You had an advantage last night, and you let the double deuce, Kevi Aluma, go to work, because I looked on paper yesterday afternoon kind of looking at this matchup, and I thought to myself, in fact, I was talking to Jay Alter, who did the game last night with Paul Biancardi. I said, Kevi Aluma might have a big ball game. And he did have a big game, Pack. He's played very well here in the first month.
No question. And the flip side with Miami, again, we've talked about the injuries, and you take Chris Likes out of the game. I'm just telling you, I know he's got to get healthy, but they're just totally different without that guy. I mean, he is just he's the catalyst. You know, they had a ton of turnovers again last night, 19, the number there. Again, if Likes is playing, that number's not at 19. And despite being down 17 and making the run, Wong's shot looked like it was in. I mean, that was just one of those you go, man, how did that thing not go in? But nevertheless, Virginia Tech, though, Wes, I laugh because I'm not going to disclose who these sources are, but they told me before the year started, we got something brewing up here in Blacksburg. You guys keep sleeping on us. You wait and see. We're going to be really good. And really, with the exception of one stinking game against Penn State, in which they just were not – they were just not there. They got waxed. Other than that, Virginia Tech has been really, really good. And, again, Mike Young's a tremendous coach. So there's some amazing storylines brewing in the ACC. We keep waiting for the quote-unquote – blue bloods to kind of pick it up. But again, that combination of Virginia Tech, Clemson, Syracuse, NC State are just kind of sitting there going, hey, guess what? You're going to have to deal with us. And it certainly looks that way.
Well, we've got a full schedule tonight, but I'll add this. Now we have also another question. Since Florida State's now lost to UCF and to Clemson, do you want to offer me your Wednesday morning alpha in the ACC?
No.
Are you staying away now?
No, I'll give you one just because we had to do it, you know, 2 weeks ago. I still think Florida State, I'm going to lean on Florida State, and I know they lost last night on the road. But Clemson and Virginia Tech are really good. I think NC State's pretty good too. You got Florida State Duke this weekend. That's your game this weekend. Knock on wood that we play it. To me, that will be a litmus test for both of them, right? Because I think we're both kind of thinking, all right, those are two guys we kind of expect to be there when it matters later on. But that game will tell me something. Florida State coming off a loss, Duke having to go on the road. Get that all over. And here's the other thing. Virginia Tech's at Virginia this weekend. Another litmus test of, okay, we got, tell me who's who here. I don't know if we have any answers. I really don't. I don't think we have a great team. I don't know if we have a team that could get to the Final Four right now. Not that it matters, because it doesn't matter in December. But we've got about 7 or 8 to pick from, and I don't know right now which one is ready to kind of bust out and just say, hey, come catch us if you can. I don't know if that guy exists.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. We get a little bit closer to the semis. Notre Dame, Bama, Clemson, Buckeyes. Friday. We got bowl today here in the backyard. Should be good. By the way, I got a gift from Duke's Mayonnaise. We'll get into all that later on. Wake's taking on Wisconsin high noon.
Let's see it.
No, I'm gonna wait till we preview the game. We'll do an entire Duke's Mayonnaise love fest. Wake Forest, the Swiss and mayonnaise. What a perfect combo there, right? A sandwich sounds good.
Ham
sounds good. But we got to get
bread. Get some bunny bread with Ty Boyd on that.
Yeah, it's old school ACC there. That's for sale with the pilot experts only. Well, only ones will understand what that means. But I'm curious to see the Deeks get back to business here. We'll talk about all that, though, later on. But we got conference cuts up first, though, Wes. And it's been a star-studded affair this week on Zoom. Hey, boy, how weird is that, right? I'm so used to national semi-media days and being front and center and all that stuff. And this whole thing with Zoom, it's typical of COVID football 2020. But that's what we got. But we got good sound bites coming your way from Notre Dame and Clemson.
When you think about it, Tony Elliott probably understands the Clemson philosophy, Mark, better than just about anybody else. Why? Because he played there, and now he's coached there, and they won national championships. So Tony Elliott yesterday was asked about embracing the target and no longer being little old Clemson.
But for us, several years back, we also adopted the mantra, embrace the target. We were no longer going to be little old Clemson that could sneak up on people, that whenever we stepped on the field, we were going to get everybody's best. And so for us, it's just about embracing the target, staying true to our fundamentals on the field, but also our fundamentals and core values off the field. And then understand that with success comes scrutiny, but always resetting every single year back to what the foundation of the program is, and then building off of that as each team creates their own identity throughout the season.
He is a very impressive dude.
And
he would be, whether he was coaching football or doing whatever he wanted to do. But he's going to be head coach at some point in time. I'm not trying to kick him out of his gig right now because he's done such a great job. But when you meet him and when you sit down and talk with him and he looks you right in the eye, gives you straight answers, there's no nonsense, you totally understand why Dabo Swinney said, hey, guess what? Tony, you're going to come coach with us. And you get it.
Yep.
You totally understand it. And he lives it on the field. He lives it away from the field, just like he was talking about with his football team. He is a tremendous dude. And like I said, he will be a head football coach some point in time in his career. Guarantee you.
Totally agree. Trevor Lawrence also on the Zoom yesterday discussing the lessons learned from losing to LSU last year in the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, what could have been? It would have been cool to have the opportunity to obviously not lose a game in college, but I think some things are necessary for you to grow. You got to face a little bit of adversity, and sometimes you can't really – you're a little bit blinded by success if you don't have any hiccups along the way, if you will. So I think for us and for me personally, it was good for us to not win that game in a lot of ways. Obviously, you want to win a national championship, and it's definitely kind of devastating in the moment. But after that, I mean, I think we've gotten a lot better. I learned a lot about myself. There's a lot of things I needed to work on to be a better player. And that just, I think leading in times when things are harder, when you lose a game, is definitely harder than when you're winning. So teaching me a little bit on how to lead better, just all those things, I think we kind of needed that. And at the end of the day, just don't want to take winning for granted. We win a lot around here, and it's easy to kind of forget how hard it is to win when you win so much. So I think it taught us a lot, and I think we took that next step as a program and as a team because of that. Obviously, you don't really choose that going forward, but sometimes it can be better for you.
Wes, it's like a 30-year-old professional football player talking, right? I mean, it's amazing that, when you listen to him say things, like he was asked yesterday about his legacy. He said, being a good person, character. Again, it's not the wins. It's not the championships. When you get answers like that from a guy that young, you understand how he processes the game and so forth. It's like talking to a grown adult, like a 30-year-old terrific NFL quarterback. And Clemson's been incredibly fortunate to have him under center here for the last 3 years.
Yeah. A lot of credit, Jeremy and Amanda, his mom and dad are tremendous people and done a great job. And he's he's taking the responsibility of understanding what it is. And I think the fact, and we've talked about it before. I mean, I first met him as a sophomore in high school, and I saw a guy who kind of understood there was going to be a degree of responsibility to this. And I think that's important. I think he sets a really good example for young kids getting ready to do the same thing.
No question.
And, you know, that's the key element there. And we're fortunate on this show, too. We see a lot of these kids. I mean, you think about it, whether it's Trevor Lawrence on the football side, Aaron Mattson in field hockey, even Valentin Noel, a young man from France who's come to play soccer at the University of Pittsburgh. Mark, we run into student-athletes more often than not that embrace that responsibility. And that says a lot about young people. And, you know, those are just headliners. I mean, we could talk about Charles Snowden and all the things Charles Snowden has meant. But a lot more than not of these student-athletes are taking that kind of leadership quality very seriously. And I respect that because I think there was a time where maybe it wasn't taken quite as seriously as it needed to be.
That's why I say my favorite part of our show is interviewing the student athletes, because they kind of, and I can't speak for anybody but me on this one, they kind of energize me, because it's like, man, those are the young, that's the next leadership, the generational period. And again, I got two girls in that same basically age period, and you're like, man, when they can take ownership and kind of understand the big picture, it's awesome.
Yep.
And it happens so often on our show when we interview these student athletes in the ACC, but just to see Trevor Lawrence to have a conversation, if you didn't know any better and you didn't even follow ACC football, and you sat down and you say, well, that guy plays for the NFL, right? He's an NFL veteran, right? I mean, he's giving you answers that just make sense, and it's incredible. Yeah. So, again, Clemson's been incredibly fortunate to have him, but he is a great representation of what a student athlete's supposed to be about.
We talk about Trevor Lawrence on this stage, by the way, and the stage being the CFP. Well, here's kind of the numbers. And he mentioned, what do you take and process from a ball game like LSU last year in New Orleans? Well, here it is. This is what it looks like. And everybody knows it's the only loss he's had at the collegiate level. But you kind of see the idea here of where it was statistically. And there's some things to glean here, Pac, as you move in to play Ohio State on Friday afternoon and Friday night.
Well, you know, this is one of those things, too. You also give credit to the team that beat them, because you can make the case that LSU team last year was the best college football team ever, based on the numbers and how they obliterated everybody. So, you know, you tip your cap to the guy you're playing, too. Yeah, you might have had an off night, but they might have had something to do with it as well. But that guy right there, 16, that's the only time you could throw those kind of numbers up and go, that was an L, because everything else has been a W.
Yep.
And when you look at the numbers going into Ohio State this weekend on Friday, that Buckeye secondary, which has been leaky at best, better strap it on real tight, because I got news for you. Clemson's going to sling it. And I can't wait to watch Friday night. I mean, Clemson-Ohio State games have been fantastic.
Well, the afternoon ball game, of course, is Notre Dame and Alabama. The Irish are still prohibitive underdogs to the Crimson Tide at Arlington on Friday. And yesterday in South Bend, Clark Lee weighed in on the offensive similarities between Clemson and Bama.
Schematically, you know, we've seen variations of what they do. I mean, I think every opponent we play is in some way unique. Obviously, I think the Clemson offense, you know, is a highly skilled outfit that, you know, that has multiple ways to move the ball and multiple ways to find explosive plays. So from a personnel standpoint, you know, there are similarities there. But you know, every offense is uniquely itself, and Coach Sarkisian does a great job. You know, it's not just about for them about, you know, their players. I mean, he does a very smart job in designing scheme to create matchups and to create problems on defense. So there's a lot for us to have to, you know, work towards in terms of finding our success on the field. As far as defending an offense is similar, I think we've seen parts and pieces through the year, but you know, Alabama's unique just like every other team's unique. So I wouldn't say it's any different in terms of our preparation.
Good luck. right? I mean, the best thing for Clark Lee is for that offensive line for Notre Dame to go, hey, we're just going to move, change, and eat clock. That's the defensive coordinator's best deal. Hey, offense, just swallow time. Keep them on the sideline. So we'll see. This is going to be an interesting chess match. I mean, Steve Sarkisian just won the assistant award, being the coach of the year from that perspective. We know about Alabama's incredible talent. But you know what? This Notre Dame team is loaded with seniors, and they are good up front on both the offensive and the defensive line. So, hey, it's why we play, man. It's why you get excited. That's why if you're a fan of Notre Dame, you got sweaty palms on Friday because, hey, you got another opportunity to change the narrative. And, yeah, it matters how you play in this game on Friday, whether coach likes it or not.
Sure does. Absolutely right. We talked about their history, at least the recent history, yesterday. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah is busy taking All-American checklist off his resume. The guy's making every All-America team, it seems like. And yesterday he talked about not getting nervous on Friday afternoon and worried about butterflies.
How do you prepare mentally? I was asked a question similar to that, I think, on my Instagram one day, and I said, you know, the challenge is not to be nervous. The challenge is not to have butterflies. It's to key in on your responsibilities, key in on you. You know, if you're nervous, if you have butterflies, that's half of the battle you lost. I think the number one thing is when you're getting ready for a game like this is to not focus on Alabama. You know, you watch too much film, you'd be like, dang, these dudes is it's amazing. They got it and gods and, you know, all this. You start to get, you know, certain mindsets. But if you key in and you focus on the things that you're supposed to key in on, if you focus on yourself, you know, if our team performs how our team is supposed to perform, you know, everything else will handle itself. The key is not to just focus on how good he is or how good, you know, this guy is, but it's to focus on yourself and your development. And ultimately, you know, that process will drive you to meet that opportunity and to ultimately succeed in your performance. So,
Wes, just like Trevor Lawrence, I mean, seriously, does Jeremiah not look like he's a 7-year vet in the NFL? I mean, the way he talks, we had a chance to interview him last month, and incredibly impressive, and he is an alpha dog. Now, let me tell you something. He's going to hit you in the next week, and he's not going to be nervous at all. He can't wait to get out there and say, let's go play some ball. So, again, you got the four best teams going to go play on Friday, so I cannot wait to watch it.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
The invite's still out there for Miami fans. I would like to hear for some Canes fans today in terms of inventory of the 2020 football season now that you're finished up at 8-3. But we'll get to that later on. All right, if you're Notre Dame, Wes, you're 2 days away from kick. You know what you're up against, but you're a talented team. Got a bunch of seniors, got great offensive and defensive line, and you've also got tight ends. And you've got a bunch of them, and they're talented. And if you're kind of looking for maybe a little kryptonite against Alabama, you know what? Tight ends have had some success against the Tide this year. And if you're a Notre Dame fan, that's good news. That's really good news.
Yeah. How about the fact, though, that you can look and see that little FPI number at the bottom of the screen there, 18.9%. That's all Notre Dame's got. Well, then you have to dig a little bit here to see, okay, where would they have that advantage, right? Tight end situation. Notre Dame, and here's some, got some real analytics going here, Pack, some real stats. Notre Dame's tight ends account for 30% of their receptions. It's the ninth highest rate in FBS. Okay? Alabama has allowed 587 receiving yards to tight ends this year. That's the second most given up. Only trailing, by the way, North Carolina in all of FBS. Thoughts?
Okay. Well, my thought is if you're Notre Dame, you like the sound of that because your offensive line is a strength. You got a smart quarterback in Ian Book that knows how to protect the football. And you've got not one, but you've got multiple talented tight ends that are going to be a problem. So, you know, I think Notre Dame's path to a W here is you've got to control the clock. You got to move chains.
Agreed.
You got to keep Bama's offense, which is fantastic, off the field. How do you do that? Well, you run the ball, you keep them honest, and you hit tight ends, right? I mean, the one thing that Notre Dame really hasn't figured out this year, and maybe it's not in their arsenal as we now get to late December, is the vertical passing game. But they will get you with tight ends. They do it all day long, and they've got guys that are comfortable making plays downfield. They will block you. They will catch. So I think that the script for Notre Dame, if you're going to have an amazing upset, humongous Friday, and that's the deal. We got to be able to run the ball. You got an offensive line. You got a smart quarterback, and you got tight ends that must make plays. All right, that's got you have. If none of that happens, you can't win the game. I don't think. But if all of that falls into play, you got a chance to cause a problem, to make Alabama uncomfortable.
Here's the other one. Notre Dame's got 93 snaps this season with three or more tight ends on the field. Only Iowa State has more. Now we're talking about packages, and you mentioned holding on to the football, running the football. Well, at some point, it could become the old, you know, like I'd say, play the football game in a shoebox, right? I mean, it's going to be move it here, take it there. And that's highly likely, in my opinion, from Notre Dame's side. You don't want Alabama having 12, 14 possessions in this ball game. You want to minimize it and see if you can get it to 8, you know, maybe 9 at most. You're not interested in letting them have the ball a dozen times or more in that ball game Friday.
Yeah, if this game becomes a track meet, I got news for you. Notre Dame, you're going to lose. And you could get embarrassed because you're not built to win that kind of game. You're not. Bama would love to play. Hey, first to 50, let's go, man. We're in. And I don't think there's anybody better in college football, first to 50, right? So you can't win the track meet. But what you can do is pound and play old school football and say, hey, guess what? We are going to establish the run. We are going to dominate time of possession. We're going to throw it to our tight ends. That's first down. That's second and six. That's third and two. That's another first down. I mean, that's how you got to play if you're Notre Dame in this game. Hey, Bama, we respect you. You are great. But you know what? You're not going to beat us if your offense isn't on the field. That, I think, is the blueprint for Notre Dame on Friday. It's got to be that way. In my opinion, it can't be anything other than that for Notre Dame to be a win, because I just don't think Notre Dame can say, guess what? We're going to beat Alabama 55-48. I just can't see that.
I think, too, the other aspect of this is you go back and look, Alabama surrendered 181 yards and a couple touchdowns to the tight end at Ole Miss, and then Kyle Pitts went for 129 in the score in the championship game a couple weeks ago. So there it is, right there on the paper. You know, it's going to be interesting. It is about possessions, and your analogy is correct. If it turns into a track meet, that is bad news. Bad news for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think it's more of a lack of possessions is the key, right? It's not a matter of possession. It's the lack of possessions. And hey, guess what? We're only going to let you touch it X amount of times. And you know what? We're comfortable enough with our defensive front and our linebackers to keep things in front of us and be able to go up against that great offensive line and take our chances. But offensively, Notre Dame must be able to. Now, if Bama stuffs them running the football and they say, hey, guess what, Ian Book, you're going to have to beat us in the air, I don't like Notre Dame's chances at all. I mean, that's not the way they're built. So, you know, the style of the fight is the deal here. You know, can Notre Dame get this into a second half game where, hey, guess what, guys? You were the 3-touchdown favorite. How does it feel to be in a 1-possession game midway through the third quarter? You know, that's what Notre Dame's got to be able to create on Friday. That put Alabama in an uncomfortable position, because the Tide has been so good that they've just obliterated their SEC opponents where, hey, they get in the second half, it's cruise control. And they're so dynamic, and Mac Jones has been great, and Devontae Smith's fantastic, and Najee Harris. I mean, the list goes on and on, and a great offensive line. So you cannot allow the big bad bully from Bama to be comfortable, right? Because if Bama gets comfortable on you in the second half, you're in deep trouble. I mean, you are in deep trouble. So you got to make them uncomfortable. The only way to do that for Notre Dame is, guess what? We're not going to give you the ball. We're just going to play keep away and keep this thing in front of us and get this into a second half and see if you guys can handle the pressure as a 20-point favorite. See how it goes.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.